Footy Spirit has pinched the Oaks by 4 lengths.
But a champion becomes a legend. Makati Deaver has won it.
Yes, hello and welcome. .com and the Den Monday's back for another week. I'm Roger Aldridge, my stable mate, of course, in the Den on a Monday from Wolf Den, Richard Irvin. Rich, welcome to you. An intriguing weekend of racing where we got to see some of the biggest names at various venues.
Yep, fantastic weekend of racing. I was live at Moonee Valley on Friday night. Love that. Then was back in Sydney to watch Broadsiding, who might be the next out-and-out superstar of Australian racing. Watch him win the Golden Rose. So, yeah, epic weekend of racing. We're going to unpack it all and give everyone the insight right now.
The Straight Six.
Yeah, it's our Straight Six where we tell you the six biggest things to take away from the weekend's racing. Let's start on Friday night where you were trackside, Rich, and it was one of the best Manicato fields we have seen, and that's because it's new home prior to the Everest. So we get all those runners that want a spot in the Everest. A huge win for Moonee Valley. A huge win by Southport Tycoon running down the three-year-old Growing Empire, who I don't think lost too many fans.
Yeah, so on Friday, maybe Thursday, we put a poll up on Twitter giving free tickets away to the Valley and saying, tell us what the best Manicato Stakes win ever was. And I think that this win might have trumped all of those ones that have come before it. It was a brilliant, brilliant win. It just had in-run betting, it got out to about 1,000 to 1. Just had no chance at all, and just the last sectional reeled off to win the race, Southport Tycoon. Incredible, great race. What to say about the winner? Well, really arrives on the scene now. Nathan Bennett, co-owner, has been calling Everest slot holders. They're very keen to go to the Everest with the horse. Why wouldn't they be? And I'd imagine that in the next couple of days, he will pick up a slot. Big win for the owners. So it's very rare. I saw Dan O'Sullivan saying that it's very rare for a four-year-old to have won a 1,600-meter Group 1 and a 1,200-meter Group 1 so early in their career. So he's going to be worth a lot at stud. I know Widden State have already bought a small stake in him, but the owners are going to get a big payday, and it's great because it's a syndicated horse, so they're probably all pretty common people, and maybe some of the money will change their life. Disappointing for Yulong. Talk about people who are not so common. Yulong have got plenty of money, but they were so close to getting a Group 1 win with Growing Empire, and it just got nutted on the line. I think that Southport Tycoon was only in front, you know, as they went past the post, you know, a metre before and a metre after. I think that Growing Empire was still in front, but he was fantastic. And the only other thing about was Willow. A lot of people sort of were sus on Willow's ride. I think now the dust has settled. Generally speaking, they think that even if Willow hadn't set up that little bit and had continued to use the whip on Growing Empire, they still think Southport Tycoon would have won.
You know, one thing that probably went a little bit by the wayside is that Matt Hill, and I love Matt, I've said this before, Matt Hill got the call. Matt Hill, I don't remember him ever getting a photo finish wrong. Mm. He went the wrong way, which is going to be tough for you know, for instance, well, if Growing Empire goes to stud, then they can use that call in the ad because it seems like he's won a Manicato.
Yeah, that's right.
Is Southport Tycoon an entire?
Absolutely. No,
yeah, well, so, there you go. Then Matt's going to have to redo it, which has been done before. Like, they redo the call. I know he redid one for Hanseatic for Rosemont Stud.
That's interesting. So yeah.
They might have to redo that one just so it looks better on that stud advertisement. But just back to Growing Empire, in all seriousness, where to next? You know, Mark Zahar rode Southport Tycoon, but he's usually the jockey for Growing Empire. And he's said in the past, as we've mentioned right here on .com and the Den Mondays, that he doesn't think the Everest is the best option and instead go to the Coolmore, and he sure price favored in the Coolmore at Growing Empire. So
yeah, $2.70 in the Coolmore he is.
Very interesting call to make.
Yeah, so the latest Kieran Maher was on RSN this morning and said that if it was his horse, he'd be running in the Everest for sure. He's going to call Yulong in the next couple of days and they'll decide what they want to do. Trav Noonan, yesterday I was listening to him on RSN Sunday mornings. He thinks that they should just go to the Coolmore, not go to the Everest. It's pretty hot Everest. Be interesting to see what they want to do, but I guess they can listen to what Kieran says. If Kieran says let's run him, they're probably going to run him, right?
Well, you'd think so. In terms of the beaten brigade outside of Growing Empire, I wish I win. Look, the Valley, I don't think really suits those real get back run on horses. Chautauqua aside, the lack of pace, although there was probably a bit more pace than you know we initially thought in the race. Barrier 12, geez, he can't draw a gate. I still think he's a good shot in the Everest, but, you know, there's certainly a school of thought out there that he is not at his best and may not be the one to watch in an Everest.
Yeah, I guess the, you know, the way that Southport Tycoon really accelerated to the line in unison with I Wish You Win and put a good couple lengths on I Wish You Win, maybe some people query that a bit. I think that he's arguably the best horse in the race, and when he gets that lovely long straight at Randwick, he'll be right in the thick of it. We just have to wait and see. Other horses that were great runs in the race, Komochi and Climbing Star were really good. Climbing Star, I think I saw, was probably going to head towards the Sydney Stakes. Disappointing runs, Estrella and Heisuji. You just got to say that they were nothing but disappointing when the pressure came on. They were found wanting. In particular, Estrella, she said, I think that's her third crack now at Group 1 level. And each time when the whips get cracking, you know, with a few hundred metres to go, she seems to fall away. So don't know where to go with Estrella. Maybe they need to drop back to lower grade against their own sex. I'd say she'll do pretty well there.
Almost taking a shine off the Group 1, in effect, was the four-horse race, the Ladbrokes Fiend Stakes. And Pride of Jenny set the valley alight, her and Brightside, and boy, did they roar.
So it's Pride of Jenny. Now Bates just starts to row along a bit. She's 10 in front off Mr. Brightside, then Ancino and Attrition as they come up towards the corner. 450 metres to go. So it's Pride of Jenny, still about 8 lengths in front off Mr. Brightside. Williams is starting to get animated and goes for the persuader. Then Ancino, Pride of Jenny has a really good buffer. 200 to go. She's 5 lengths in front. Mr. Brightside's chipping away. Pride of Jenny trying to find the reserves at the 100. She's 3 in front of Mr. Brightside. It's all too late. Pride of Jenny has run them into the night. Pride of Jenny by a length and a half. Mr. Brightside, Ancino, last Attrition.
She's the horse that gets fans, non-racing fans, to the races. Obviously, their grand final holiday helps in that respect. But, you know, you were there, Rich. And as we just heard there, the crowd was absolutely heaving. And this race didn't disappoint.
Yeah, I put that video together. I just thought, great way to show people how much the crowd cared about Pride of Jenny, how much they cared about the race as well. I mean, everyone loves Mr. Brightside as well. I didn't actually get to watch it live because I was in our live stream sort of tucked away in the grandstand. But everyone who came in and talked to us later on the stream said that they've never heard a roar like it when Matt Hill said she's in front by 10 lengths. People really, really loved it. They're so good for racing, these two, aren't they? And it looks like the duel's going to continue.
Yeah, and that's the exciting thing, I think, Rich. And also, just we better say credit to Maggie Payne, who her vision.
We ripped her video, yep.
Yeah, Maggie Payne from the VRC. Great chick. Great girl. Now, what I was going to say, this battle reminds me, on an AFL perspective, West Coast and Sydney back in this sort of 2005 to 2009 or 10, they played in the 05 and 06 grand finals. And not just those games, there was never more than it was between 1 and 6 points every time they played. And that's like Brightside and Jenny. You never know really which way it's going to go. Jenny's obviously got the upper hand in some respects, but there's no reason why Brightside can't next clash and get the better of it. It's just it's such a great thing for racing to have this rivalry. And it's going to be such a key thing throughout the spring.
Yeah, I think that in the Memsey, everyone thought that it really set up much better for Mr. Brightside, and the feeling before the Fiend was that it set up much better for Pride of Jenny. So I guess the thing is, where to next? So Pride of Jenny, it seems they're very clear. They're going to go to the King Charles and then hopefully back up into the Cox Plate. So the King Charles is 3 weeks away. So, you know, the run she had on Friday night would have got a cherry ripe for the King Charles over 1,600 metres at Randwick. Then hopefully she comes back and runs in what is going to be one of the all-time Cox Plates. We'll have a look at the market in a second. Mr. Brightside, what happens with him? Well, interestingly, so JD Hayes came up to our live stream and sat down with us and chatted with us for about 20 minutes, said he couldn't be happy with the way Mr. Brightside ran. They sort of expected things to pan out the way they did. One thing he threw up that was interesting is that they have looked at the Hill Stakes, a 1,900-metre race at Rose Hill, as a possibility where Mr. Brightside could have a run before the Cox Plate. They like the look of that race. One, it's $2 million prize money. It's a lot of money. But also just maybe they'd get there and there wouldn't be the frenetic pace that they always have in these races when she takes on Pride of Jenny. But I did see a tweet this morning saying that they're tossing up between the Might and Power and the King Charles at this stage. So the Might and Power is obviously on Caulfield Guineas, 2,000-metre race at Caulfield, and you'd almost certainly avoid Pride of Jenny then. So we'll see. But why don't we talk about this Cox Plate? We've got the market for it. You've been watching these a long time, Rog. What do you think about this one, the way it looks at the moment?
Well, this is mouthwatering. And certainly, you know, Mr. Brightside, they've long had the goal of the Cox Plate. Pride of Jenny definitely going there too. Broadsiding, well, we'll talk about him a little bit later. But, you know, The three-year-olds and the Cox Plate, I love it. Prognosis, the Japanese superstar, is currently favourite in that market. Versus Stena, well, you know, redemption potential this weekend. You know, if she comes out and wins a Turnbull, then it gets even more interesting. Fangirl probably won't go there at $15. But this is shaping, if they all go there, this is shaping up as one of the great Cox Plates. And the roar that you experience Friday night, well, this will be tenfold if these are if these horses go to the Cox Plate. Because there's no better place to watch racing than Moonee Valley in terms of live, because the crowd on Cox Plate Day is like nothing else.
Yeah, and especially if they do ride Pride of Jenny as aggressively as they rode her on Friday night, if she really gets out to a lead, I mean, it's pretty unprecedented. You see a horse that's well in the market to be out in front by 10 or 12 lengths in the Cox Plate, but that might well happen, and that would be incredible viewing. We will be there again. We will be live streaming from the Cox Plate again.
Let's move on to Evaporate. Honor Corthell, Guinea's Path, winning the Stutt Stakes. You had JD, as you mentioned. He would have been very, very happy. They had some good results on Friday night, regardless of Mr. Brightside's defeat. And this was one of them.
Yeah, he actually watched the race with us live. He was pretty confident going into the race. It was a pretty easy watch because you can see on the screen here now, Evaporate just rounds them up and goes past some pretty decent horses. You got Daggers, Ruta Royal, and Dawn Service, who were all, you know, serious contenders before the race for the Caulfield Guineas. I just want to quickly point out, watch Henlane finishing off super strongly. We'll talk about him there. He's in the yellow colours from the Freedman Yard. But Evaporate, great win. JD Hayes said something interesting, said that it's the most expensive horse the boys have ever bought on spec at the yearling sales. They paid $330,000 for him, and then they had to go out and sell him, and they'd be pretty happy with the result and would feel vindicated because he's a great chance in the Caulfield Guineas. I think he's about $11 chance. In the Caulfield Guineas. And the other one, so Henlane. So when I did a podcast with Sam Freedman, I said, mate, can you tell me a couple of horses who everyone should try and get on for the spring? He said Plastic Carousel. Plastic Carousel's got a little bit of work to do, but he did say Henlane. He said Henlane's a really good horse on the way up, and we think he's got a great chance in something like the Spring Champion Stakes. Well, after that run on Friday night, he's now into $3 for the Spring Champion Stakes, which is a 2,000-metre race at Randwick. Great race, and onward to the Caulfield Guineas.
It was your chat with Sammy Freedman which got me chips in on Place the Carousel last week. So, Sammy, you've got some redemption. Maybe Henlane will be the way out for my Ladbrokes account. Let's move on, because the Golden Rose was sensational. It was a blue 1-2. I had Traffic Warden just ahead of Brightside going in, just ahead of Broadside and going in, and purely because of the first up task for the ladder, but the conditions at Rose Hill, I mean, right a race it was. I jumped on Broadsiding toward the jump, and this race lived up to the hype. Traffic Warden was almost as impressive, but conditions probably suited Broadsiding just that little bit better.
Yeah, we're seeing the end stages of the race now. Stormboy out in front. So Broadsiding's just coming into the running line now. Massive go. I think it started even money across the totes. A lot of people who know what they're talking about say it's one of the biggest goes they've seen a Group 1 race for a really long time. It's also the first horse to ever win the Golden Rose first up in its 20-year history. And he reminds me, even as they go to the line here, he reminds me a lot of Octagonal, Lonro, Animo, those horses that have either come from the Inghams or Darley or Godolphin, as we call it now. They just seem to do so well over all those different weight for age distances and just get their nose there in time. So, yeah, it'd be super exciting if he's the next weight for age star of Australia. I think everyone thinks he might be, and looks like he's got the Caulfield Guineas and the Cox Plate at his mercy.
I don't know about the Cox Plate at his mercy, but definitely the Caulfield Guineas. We'll just see what happens on the Cox Plate. 99th Group 1 win for James McDonald, though, Rich, and he's about to rack up triple figures and raise the bat probably this Saturday, let's be honest, the way J-Mac's going. And
his next race, Autumn Glow. Autumn Glow will be his next Group 1 race. So.
His book of rides that he's got going into the spring is sensational. I know our good friend Tom Hackett from Ladbrokes, who we'll chat to on Cook the Book shortly, he said, well over a year ago, probably 2 years ago now, he reckons Jace McDonald will get to 200 Group 1 wins.
Wow.
And, I mean, geez, yeah. He's only, what, early 30s?
Yeah, no, you're right, yeah. He loves it. He's, you know, he wants to keep going at it. So, yeah, fair enough. And he also gets the international rides help a bit too, don't they? He can pick up, you know, 10 of those a year or something that helps him push along to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Stormboy led for much of the race and just got overrun at that end. He ran fourth. There was plenty of merit in this run. You put the question up on Twitter, as we can see on the screen now, Rich. Where to next? Would you run him in the Everest or would you go to the Caulfield Guineas? And, I'd probably lean towards Everest. What are your thoughts?
No, I think he's going to go to the Everest. I saw a tweet up earlier saying that Tim Clark's been booked to ride him in the Everest. So that shows that that's probably where he's going to go.
So that's
I think what we need to realise. Say that again.
That'll be the Coolmore slot, obviously.
Yes, yes. He, I think that he's just not the top liner that probably we thought he was. I think he's had enough cracks now to say that he's just not quite that elite top liner that, you know, people thought he might be. Still a massive chance to win a Group One. Pressure's off a bit. You know, they only need to win one Group One with him to kind of justify the money that they paid for him, or Coolmore paid for him to become a stallion. So if he can get that, they'll be pretty happy, and I can definitely see that happening. Interestingly, I didn't put the option up in this tweet that freshen him up and put him into the Coolmore, which is 5 weeks away, but a lot of people didn't want to answer either of those options and wanted to say that they think that he should be freshened and put into the Coolmore. Other horses in the race, Traffic Warden, fantastic run. He's a fantastic horse. James Cumming this morning saying, I was listening to him on Giddy Up with Gareth Hall, said that they're in no rush to decide if Traffic Warden does go to the Everest. They'll leave that. I think that they don't have to.
Surely. 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think they were saying they don't even have to decide until like Tuesday before the Everest. He wouldn't commit at all to saying whether he goes or not. He said that they definitely see Traffic Warden as their Coolmore stud stakes horse. They want to get a Group One win with him. He's a stallion. That's what they're about. They're breeders, you know. So big tick to go into the Coolmore. They'll decide what they do about the Everest soon. I agree with you. I think they'll probably run him. You think they'll run him?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I certainly would. I think he's definitely
in the Everest. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. In terms of Stormboy, though, I'm not ready to put a line through him just yet as a potential star. I think that track conditions probably didn't suit him too much, and he wasn't beaten far. You know, he runs in Sydney, so it's always wet up your way, Rich. But if he gets a good three, good four down in Melbourne, he could blow some rivals away, I reckon.
Fair enough. And the other horse that I thought was a great run was Mayfair. Looked like he's probably going to drop off with about 100 metres to go and then just kick back up and actually beat Stormboy home. Let's have a look at the Caulfield Guineas market, Rog. Not often you see an even money shot in the Caulfield Guineas, is it? But there it is.
Yeah, that's right. And this far out, I'm not sure I'm playing futures. I certainly, but broadsiding, you think if he does go there, that $2 might look overs. But I remember Piero went around $1.20 and got rolled by All Too Hard back in the day. So, you know, we do get the short price favourites in the Guineas. Linebacker $6, Stormboy there at $8, Traffic Warden $9 if he goes there, Evaporate $11, Angel Capital, probably the best of the Victorian horses at $12. So you're, and Mayfair $15 along with an ode. So look, it's shaping up as a nice race, the Caulfield Guineas, but, you know, I think there's going to be some better three-year-old races this spring. Let's move on to a very interesting one, and that is the Golden Pendant and Macarena. Now, I know you love your 90s dance music.
I do.
Rich, Macarena, of course, one-hit wonders. I've long been a big Amelia's Jewel man, but as I said on the Moody on the Mic podcast league when making it my best bet, if she doesn't win this, I'm out on her. She had every chance to run down Macarena and couldn't. But the winner was great, and a big result in particular, Richard, for the owners of Macarena.
Yes. Well, let's just watch them go past the line here so you can see Macarena well out in front. Amelia's Jewel has every chance to pick her up and can't. So what did this do to the owners of Macarena? Let's go and have a look at that right now. There you go. Very ordinary dancing. We've got Michael Lork, Zach Lloyd, I presume on the end there. It's one of the owners. He's probably the worst dancer of all, but looks like he cares the least.
Looks like Alf Stewart from Home and Away, actually.
That actually does. Anyway, they're obviously having a great time. Good on them. It's hard to get good horses. And I think that the Wayne, John and Michael, their wives, were a big share of the ownership of Macarena. So it would have been a huge night for them. Big result. And it was a Group 2 race. The mare's won a Group 2 now. So it's obviously very, very valuable as a breeding prospect. And I think that the next races they're going to go to and don't actually carry any group status at the moment. They are the Invitation, a $2 million 1400 race for fillies and mares. Later in the Sydney Carnival, and of course, there's a $10 million Golden Eagle on Derby Day. But look, she's $21 chance in that Golden Eagle. It's pretty deep-looking race, as you'd expect when there's $10 million prize money.
They don't carry group status, Rich, but, you know, as breeders, Anthony Mith and my mate tell me many a time that you could sell the progeny on the back of races like the Golden Eagle and the Everest and that sort of stuff. So with these big races that the fields are strong, you don't necessarily need that group status when they're going.
So you think it's a bit overplayed, the idea they're not group races so that people won't go there?
In certain scenarios, like the Golden Eagle, for example, you'd do all right off the back of a Golden Eagle win.
Sure. And Amelia's Jewel, you sort of alluded to it before. Yeah, a little. I mean, she still ran fantastic. Well, she's doing really well. She's maybe just not that absolute Group 1 top liner that everyone thought that she could be. So we're doing a little bit of partnership with Annabelle Neesham and Rob Archibald over the spring. Annabelle will be in here in the seat next to me on Thursday so we can get a full brief from her about Amelia's Jewel. But probably they need to drop back to just mare's grade Empire Rose. She'd probably be a fantastic chance in the Empire Rose where it's only mares at Flemington.
And 1,600, importantly, yeah, as well. That would be the thing. But she's now run second in four of her last five starts. The outlier was 12th of 15, beating 3.5 lengths in the Goodwood. She mm-hmm. wore blinkers that day. That's the only time I think she's raced in blinkers. But a trainer said to me the first thing they'd do if she was in that stable was whack the blinkers back on and educate her in them. So put that okay. to Annabelle.
I will. I'll put it to Annabelle. Yeah.
All right. Lightning striking at Sandown. Not literally. we're talking about Desert Lightning. So Sandown Saturday, while most Victorian eyes were on the MCG, Desert Lightning having his second start for Moody Coleman. Very good winning the Group 3 Sandown Stakes. And this is a horse who won a Group 1 Mate for Age over the mile in New Zealand last December.
Yeah, you just saw Trummy Nolan push the button and away he went. Really competent win. Craig flashed home. You can see Craig flashing home there to run second. He ran his last 210.5, so that is very, very quick going. He struck a bit of trouble early in the straight and whatnot and didn't have an easy time of it. But I think out of the races, only two you want to look at is Desert Lightning and Craig. I think Desert Lightning is about a $15 chance in the Toorak, which seems about right. Obviously, another wheel dominates the Toorak market, but yeah, very competent win.
Also in that race, Rich, now we've spoken about the Caulfield Guineas a couple of times. Griff won the Guineas last year, and he was disappointing in this race, and I'm not sure, you know, where they go to now. He's an entire, Group 1 winning entire, so maybe he finds a way off the stud sooner rather than later, although he probably missed this season.
Yeah, well, he's damaging his reputation by racing at the moment, isn't he? He ran last there on Saturday and just seems to have lost all form. So,
all right, let's move on to the all-important ratings. Dan O'Sullivan does terrific work, as we know, Rich, and no great surprise here. Pride of Jenny, the top of the pops.
Yeah, I love Dano's ratings each week. I was pestering this morning to get them up. I'm sure many other people were on Twitter as well, but why don't we start by saying what he said about Pride of Jenny's 103.5. Well, he said Pride of Jenny's 103.5 is up from 102.9 in the Group 1 Mackay Beadiva. She has been 104.8, 105.2, 107 before.
Broadsiding 102.5, his win in the Golden Rose. That was just off his 103 peak in the Group 1 JJ Atkins over 1,600 metres. From what we saw on Saturday, this is Dan O'Sullivan talking, it's all upside for him.
Isn't that exciting? Moving to Southport Tycoon, 102 at 1,200 was a new peak for him. From his 101.5 Group 1 Australian Guineas win over 1,600 metres, a very rare achievement to have a Group 1 1,200 metre and Group 1 1,600 metre win by the time a horse reaches the early stages of their four-year-old season. And I'll let you read this next one, Rog. And this is the zinger of the week for me, the one that surprised me.
Yeah, Desert Lightning, 100.5. So that's up from 98.8 first up and within a length of his peak, which is 102 in New Zealand.
And to finish off Macarena, Dano didn't give us any description about that one. So we'll just leave it at that.
It was a 97, though, for those playing at home. And sure, when I do see these, because it's not often you get a 0.5. I don't recall seeing it. And I look at it and I go, it just looks like a radio station. So when you said 103.5, I was expecting you to say, like, you know, Mix FM or Triple M or something after it.
Triple M 104.9.
Welcome back to 98.7.com and the Den Monday. It's time now for Stewards in 60.
Just quickly, have you ever been on the radio, Rog? You sound like you got a voice for radio.
Many, many times.
Very good.
Stewards Room Speed Round.
All right, Stewards in 60. Stanley Express, highly rated three-year-old gelding from the Clinton McDonald stable. He was pulled up Friday night, went for 4:40 second elect. He was diagnosed with a cardiac arrhythmia and will need a vet clearance, including an ECG over a 1,000-metre gallop before racing again. Same goes to Matriarch Rose, who had that same issue in the last at the Valley on Friday night. And Niza, highly rated filly from the Moody and Coleman yard. She was scratched prior to racing on Friday night. She had some swelling in her left fore and will also need a vet clearance before racing. The main one from Sandown on Saturday, as mentioned earlier, was Griff, who had a throat condition, and he will also need a vet clearance. Jarova, who was a $9 shot in race 5, ran last and was subsequently determined to be lame.
Cook the book.
The most popular segment on .com and the Den Mondays, Cook the Book. It was billed as an almost match race on Friday night in the Ladbrokes Fee and Stakes. Time and Pride of Jenny, Mr. Brightside, seemed to trade favouritism a couple of times. What did their respective holds look like, and was there any interest in Tino or attrition?
Now, from a punting standpoint, Rog, it very much did turn into a match race. And then late from a punting standpoint, it basically turned into a one-horse affair. The boys in the den were very keen, Pride of Jenny, and a lot of the punters very much followed them in. Pride of Jenny was easily the best backed in the race. The hold ended up being over $500,000 when she got the job done, leading from start to finish, as she likes to do. The losing result for the Ludbrokes book was $323,000. So punters got around Pride of Jenny. You could hear the roar. The roar, even when she just went to the front and led by 8 lengths, was I don't think I've ever heard a roar like that just for a horse finding the front at a racetrack. So no, it was a very popular result with the Ludbrokes punters, and not a great result for the Ludbrokes book.
They were to fill up for the pros, including Kingsley Bartholomew, so much so that he's taken the cash and headed to the Bahamas or something like that. Matt Taylor's filling in for him.
Hey, Rog. Matt, yeah, nice to meet you. Yep, thank you.
From the punting point of view, as Tom alluded to, the Wolf Den boys Friday night, the live stream, very keen on Pride of Jenny. You would have been very happy when the race unfolded.
Yeah, exactly. I think she went out about 10 lengths fast her previous start, and I think Kingsley may have alluded to last week's show that he'd like her ridden a bit faster. Looks like she went out about 14 lengths quick this time, got him off the bit, so no pressure in the race besides her. 225 into 195, it was a good start for us, a good result.
Yeah, huge go. Hey, Tommy, the Manicato was one of the best fields we've seen. Mark Hunter on RSM was really keen each way, Southport Tycoon. Kieran gave it a push as well. Was there money for him at a price, like on the back of those two pushes to still unfound?
No, punters did not want a bar of Southport Tycoon. So this is a race where the hold was over $1.3 million. Of that $1.3 million, just over 14,000 of it was on Southport Tycoon. Ooh. So Southport Tycoon was one of our best results in the race. And this is a race where we were standing, I wish I win, for over $600,000. We were standing Hayasugi for over $400,000. And Growing Empire was a losing result for the book as well. So that photo finish once again went our way. And it was basically a $600,000 turnaround. So even more than that, actually. So Southport Tycoon ended up being a $689,000 winner for the book, while Growing Empire would have been around about a $100,000 loser. So another photo finish that well and truly went our way.
Gee, so the Ladbrokes Christmas party will be down there at Southport this year, just paying tribute to Southport Tycoon.
Well, we haven't talked about Saturday yet, Rog. So after Saturday, the Christmas party might be off, but we'll get to that shortly.
Hey, Matt, watching the race, you could hear the groan from the crowd when Growing Empire got run down. Were you one of those groaning?
Yeah, we were groaning. We had it in our quaddy. Had nothing to do with Southport Tycoon. A few boys in the stream thought that the leader had held on, but not to be. Just an incredible performance by the winner. Just the way it travelled throughout the whole race with the blinkers was just incredible. So you can't make. I mean, the second horse was great, but sick result for us.
If you look at Saturday now at Rose Hill, the Golden Rose, Matt, the broadsiding was a monstrous go. Was he a big play for the pros and big play in the den?
Not for us. Like a horse first up into that race, it's very rarely done. Obviously, the horse had quality form. By the time we got around to betting on race day, you sort of like it was mostly, you know, $2.50 and up, and then it was backed into $2.30. I think you guys were at Ladbrokes at jump. Too short for us to get involved on broadsiding, but he justified the performance with a great win.
Few beers in on grand final day. I was happy to take $2.25 in the end. But Tommy, what sort of coin are we talking about here? For broadsiding in a race like that, to be backed in from $3 to sort of near even money, that's some kind of go. What are the numbers telling us?
This is the biggest go we've seen of this racing season to date. One of the biggest goes of the year. It was quite incredible, really, for sort of the reasons Matt outlined. Our training team, we were sort of quite keen to be against broadsiding. Obviously, first up from the spell, drawn a little sticky in barrier one. It did look like a pretty good lay for the trading team. So open $2.80, got out to $3.60, back into $3.30, and then in the last hour was $3.30 into $2.30. A serious, serious go. So the hold was over $600,000, ended up being an $808,000 loser for the Ludbrokes book. So that's our worst result in an individual race of the year thus far. And that will finish the year, hopefully, that will finish the year as one of our worst results of the year. And the concerning thing is it might not be the only time broadsiding gives us a touch up this spring, because now into $2.20 to win the Caulfield Guineas, into $6 to win the Ladbrokes Cox Plate as well. So the Golden Rose probably always looked like first up over 1,400, always probably looked like his toughest assignment. So it's scary to think what we could see from this horse this spring. But if we can get an informed broadsiding going into a Ladbrokes Cox Plate up against Pride of Jenny, up against Mr. Brightside, Prognosis from Japan, Docklands from Europe, this is setting up to be a salivating Ladbrokes Cox Plate.
Oh, we know you get very excited, Tommy. We know that. And if the traders are laying broadsiding, maybe they just don't get invited to the Christmas party. Maybe that's how we solve the issue. It doesn't cost as much.
You know the Christmas party at Ladbrokes would be a fairly boring affair if we didn't have the traders there. Come on.
Very true. I don't remember
to be there.
Yeah. I don't know.
He got fired. He got fired. Made redundant, Mike Iceberg.
Hey, broadsiding, obviously, where the punters got you good and proper, Tommy. But is there any other that goes over the weekend where they got a hold of you?
Our punters at Rose Hill on Saturday, just the only team that went better than the punters on Saturday were the Brisbane Lions. Our punters at Rose Hill, they won 6 of the 10 races. And even the races in which the punters were losing, we didn't get a huge collect there. Probably the best result from a trading standpoint was in race 7, Amelia's Jewel. We might add another statue of Amelia's Jewel to the Ladbrokes trading room. Once again, she proved to be the friend for the traders. But early on, punters, unique ambition. The first at Rose Hill was a $200,000 winner for the punters. So they were up and about across the day on Saturday at Rose Hill. So well and truly, points go to the punters for this one.
AFL Grand Final on Saturday. So obviously the big meet in Melbourne is on Friday night. It's still Sandown on a Saturday and a Group 1 race meet in Sydney. What's the turnover like in comparison to a standard Saturday or a standard Group 1 Saturday when you've got an event like the AFL Grand Final where there was, you know, not it's not just that big AFL states following it, but with Sydney and Brisbane playing off, I'd imagine there was sort of even more eyeballs on that.
Yeah, absolutely, Roger. It was interesting that, like, it was definitely a concern going into the weekend that what the grand final would do for turnover. In the end, turnover was more than comparable with a regular Saturday Group 1 meeting during the spring without the AFL grand final on. I think what played into our favour from a turnover standpoint was that the Lions had that game well and truly wrapped up basically before halftime and sort of before we got into the Golden Rose. So the turnover for the Golden Rose was superior to the last two weekends of Group 1 racing. And then if you look at obviously the big difference on this weekend is the Friday night, the Ladbrokes Monocato Stakes, the turnover was the highest we've seen in a Group 1 race this season. So across the space of the weekend, turnover was actually well and truly up on the racing and there was certainly no damage done on the Saturday.
All right, Tom, before we go, in a word, win or loss, Ladbrokes, Moody Valley.
Win for the book on Friday night.
Saturday, Rose Hill.
Big loss for the book.
Saturday,
dead. Small win for the book. So Saturday, punters definitely get the 3 points.
All right, Sydney Swans-like performance from Ladbrokes on Saturday at Rose Hill. Matt, Tommy,
we weren't that
thanks.
Bad, Rog.
No, that was too bad to be true. Hey, guys, thanks very much for your time. We'll chat to you next week.
Sneak peek.
Alrighty, let's take a look at next week, or this week, as the case may be. And it is Turnbull Stakes Day at Flemington. So this is the last race meet at headquarters before we hit the Cup Carnival. And VS Athena, Shot at Redemption, $3.20. Alias, $5, along with Mr. Brightside if he goes there. $8, Buckaroo, Warmonger, $9, double figure odds or more, the rest, Rich.
Yeah, it's an epic day of racing. I'm calling it Super Saturday. The racing from Randwick and Flemington.
Did you come up with that yourself?
No, I did not. It's well-versed one, but they usually only use it in autumn. So I think if I use it in spring, I can have ownership over it. But yeah, it's an incredible day of racing. I was actually thinking about the Saturday session that we do, which is a bit of a highlights package of what happens in the den. Normally we do 6 or 7 races. I'm actually thinking about doing 13 races because there's so many interesting races that we've got to have a look at. And let's start with the Turnbull Stakes, as you say. So there's the market for that. It'll be a fantastic race. Moving on from that, why don't we go and have a look at what else we've got in store for us. So the first one, the Gilgives for the sprinters. Some interesting runners there. Jimmy Starr, Arkansas Kid, both last start winners. Stretton Angel looking for redemption, so is Right to Parties. That's a really solid race, only Group 2.
Yeah, Stretton Angel, one of my favourites. Sharipa also coming over from Adelaide as well. So an interesting race there for the sprinters. Another golden ticket, which you can't sell, Richard. into the Melbourne Cup in terms of the Bart Cummings 2500 meter Group 3 handicap. And, you know, the same, the usual suspects going around here, I guess we'll call them.
Yeah, post impressionist looking a bit of redemption. Wasn't fantastic last start. Berkshire Breeze needs to win this race to probably get himself into the Melbourne Cup. A lot of people think he's a good chance if he can get in there. Who else we got? Just Fine, the Metrop winner. Yeah, that'll be a fantastic race. What else we got,
Dane Hill, 3-year-olds. Have a look at that. That's the 1,100 metre group two, set weights, penalties. First settler bodyguard. They were highly rated in the autumn. Bitter Creek, a very promising horse from the Leon and Troy Corsons, and now Larkin Yard as well. And High Octane from Snowden. So that should be a good race as well.
Yeah, a lot of these horses are going on the Coolmore. It's probably the B set of the 3-year-old sprinters, because we've got some real classy ones like Growing Empire and Traffic Warden, who are probably going to remain in that open company for a little while longer, but it'll be a cracking race. First Settler was a fantastic race when it ran second to Growing Empire. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes. Yeah. What else we got? We've got the Rose of Kingston as well for the mares. We've got the Maribyrnong for the 2-year-olds. The Maribyrnong is always a great race to see how the 2-year-olds are going. We've got a couple 2-year-old races up in Sydney as well. It's a fantastic race in Sydney, headlined by the Epsom, the Group 1 Epsom. You've got the Group 1 Metrop, and you've also got the Group 1 Flight Stakes, where we'll see Autumn Glow go around and try and keep our unbeaten status intact.
And clear space for racing on Saturday afternoon too, because obviously the AFL season's finished and the NRL Grand Final is Sunday night. So we can really sit back and enjoy quality racing in two states on the weekend before ideally we sit down Sunday night and watch the mighty Melbourne Storm win another NRL premiership.
Oh, they beat the Roosters, did they? Everyone thought the Roosters had beat them. Well, they won't win the Grand Final. Penrith. Three in a row for Penrith. It'll be too easy for them.
It'd be four in a row for Penrith if they get up.
But, so I'm saying three in a row so far.
Yeah. Well, we've beaten them twice this season, so hopefully they can continue that. But two very different games, and I don't want to think about it too much at the moment. I'll concentrate on the racing and shift my focus on the couch on Sunday night. But, Richard, another great episode of .com and the Den Mondays. Hopefully you all enjoyed it, and we'll be back next Monday to debrief on the weekend that was, as you said, another terrific Saturday ahead of us.
It's getting more and more serious, and we're doing a great job, Roger. I appreciate your help, and I appreciate everyone watching at home. Up the Den. We'll see you next week. Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.